Good morning, everyone. I'm Asha Nayaswami, and here we are again. Here we go again. People have talked about having tea with Asha if you're in the morning zone that we're in, so here I am with my favorite red cup and my cup of coffee. And let's start another day. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Beloved Master, Paramahansa Yogananda, Saints of all religions, dearest friend, Swami Kriyananda, humbly we bow to you all. We are your children. We need your guidance, your strength, the confidence that comes that knowing from knowing that you are with us. Show us the way through the labyrinth of delusion into the clear light of spirit. Om, peace, amen. Every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock for 20 minutes, there's a worldwide, everything is worldwide, but it's a particular invitation to become a warrior of light and to participate in a little satsang and an affirmation. It's led by Ananda.org. If you go on to Ananda.org at any point, you can see where it, where you can click onto it very easily. It's led by, first it was led by Jyotish and Devi from Ananda Village. Now it's being led from Assisi. Last week, Kirtani and Anand. This morning, just a short time ago, Nayaswami Shivani was the one who was leading it. Shivani and I have been friends since the very, very beginning. She preceded me to Ananda by a year or two. But so she's always been part of my Ananda life. We've had a wonderful, many wonderful adventures together. So I have a particular heart bond for her, and I was very happy to see her speaking today. But mostly I was really impressed by what she said. And what she said was something that's quite fundamental to the spiritual path. Shivani's always had a great interest in healing. And from the earliest time, and one of the reasons, mostly just inclination, that I never really focused on that aspect of Master's teachings as much as because she was, and we were often partnered in teaching and so on, and she had it covered, so I never thought about doing it. So she was reading from Master's teachings, just a few sentences, and the sentence was about vibrations. And she was talking about the fact, which is a metaphysical fact, that the entire so-called material world is just energy in different stages of vibration. This is a scientific fact that people with scientific minds can explain much more clearly. I just accept that it's true for scientific and spiritual, on spiritual and scientific authority. So she was talking about how high there are higher and lower vibrations, and it is relative to the degree to which those vibrations are in tune, you would say in tune with Om, in tune with the absolute centered stillness power of the spirit, which is our true nature, which when I say lead us through the labyrinth of delusion to the clear light of spirit, when God created the universe, he vibrated his consciousness. These again are just words, but it makes a picture. There's the absolute stillness of spirit, the perfect silence, the absolute oneness, and then God vibrates like this. And when it's vibrating right close to the oneness, it sounds more and more like Om. And that's why when we meditate, when we go, if someone could bring me a glass of water, I would be very grateful. That's why when we go and get the closer and closer we get to spirit, or when we go into meditation, we can listen to the Om vibration and we can begin to hear it. The more still we get, the more we realize that there is this tremendous sound of creation. Oftentimes when people go into nature and they're very much quiet and away from all kinds of human noises. Thank you. When they're away from human noises, they realize that there was a sound to silence. And the reason we can have a contradiction like the sound of silence is because it's not something that we are externally hearing. It's something that is emanating from within us because we get closer and closer to that vibration of spirit. But the farther away, the greater the oscillation, or just even the movement away from that oneness, the more the vibration changes into something else. Swami Kriyananda, who is a very adventurous person and never hesitated to conduct the experiment to find out what he wanted to know, when he heard, as a young monk in Mount Washington, when he was very new there, he heard about the idea of disembodied spirits, that there were disembodied spirits who might actually, you know, want to communicate, even take possession of a physical body that was otherwise inhabited. Now, most people are terrified of things like this. Swami was just simply interested to know if it existed. So he became quite curious about what it would do and how what it was like. And these are not wholesome curiosities, but nonetheless he had one, probably because he knew he was destined to be a teacher and he needed to understand everything. So he had a dream, he said. And in the dream, he suddenly woke up and realized it was time for him to meet a disembodied spirit. And so in the dream, he was taken into some sort of large, empty room. And he stepped into the room and he said he heard Om, but it was like the opposite side of Om, that it was very dissonant and it was very evil, but it was the same power. It was just that power pulled away from the light instead of pulling toward the light. And he said he sort of stepped into it and he felt that vibration. And at first it was just intriguing to him. But then he felt it beginning to try to take over his consciousness and he realized that this was nothing he wanted. And he just called out, "Master!" like that, calling upon his guru. Instantly it stopped. And then the next day, now I hope I have this correct, somehow or another, without telling him, Master knew that Walter had been up to a little mischief. And it was sort of like, but Master understood why Swami was doing it. But Swamiji was impressed on many levels, not the least of which was all he had to do was call to Master, and the power of Master's vibration completely dissipated the negative vibration, because the negative borrows its power from the light, but the light is the source of its power. What negativity, darkness, fear, evil, viruses, germs, bacteria, they take the same divine power, but they try to pull it away from the light instead of pulling it toward the light, to cause us suffering, to cause us difficulty, to keep us from having faith, to keep us from going forward. So Shivani was quoting Master as saying, you know, we have within us the power to choose our vibration. And the vibration of positive thought, of affirmation, of divine faith, of chanting, of energization exercises, of kriya, and we can just make a long list of these, all of those have a higher vibration than germs and bacteria and viruses. And the power of what Master calls, and is rightly called, vibratory healing, is when we change our vibration. Which is why very odd and subtle things, like odd from a material logic point of view, like homeopathy or flower essences, where, you know, and I've used these, both homeopathy and flower essences, and except for the fact that they don't make any sense and shouldn't work, they work. I use a homeopathic jet lag formula, just something called jet lag or something like that. And when I take those jet lag pills, my international travel is completely different. International travel has completely changed for me when I eat these little white pills during my journey. What I just to describe it, it used to be that when you would take like flying to India, which is a complete 12-hour shift, and it's like, well, it's usually it's 24 hours from when I walk out of my house to when I walk into wherever I'm going in India. That's no matter what flight, that's always how it turns out. Well, it can be longer, but it takes at least that long. And I used to feel like my brain was kind of like butter, and my brain was just spread like on toast all the way from India back to California. And I would arrive apparently intact, but it was like my brain was traveling more slowly. And so it would take a few days before my brain rolled up and kind of was all back inside my head. With the homeopathic jet lag pills, my brain is still inside my head. I'm tired. I have sleep issues perhaps for a little bit, but I feel like I'm totally present. I'm all there. And I can't explain it. But there's some vibratory power implanted in homeopathy. There's vibratory power in the flower essences. And my friend who's a naturopath, that's how she talks about it. We tend to talk about physical, mental, and spiritual healing, but those are a little harder to parse apart. So she talks about, material intervention and vibratory intervention. And vibratory intervention is much more powerful because everything in creation comes from the causal to the astral to the physical. Everything in physical creation begins with a thought. That thought becomes energized. Causal is the thought plane. Astral is the energy plane. Material is when causal and astral have finally manifested. So whereas we think this is the big one because it's so clunky and rock-like, it appears to be bigger to our senses, but it's actually the furthest extension. The real power is the energy we put out and the thought behind that energy. So the principle of vibratory healing, which is what we're doing when we're on Thursday mornings and every day when we say, I am a warrior of the light with a sword of faith in my hand and the love of God in my heart. I take my stand for the light with my brothers and sisters. We're going to the causal. We have this thought. We have this thought. Then we put energy behind it. And it will manifest. And Master says that's where the power comes from. Our vibration, if we manifest a vibration that is higher than the vibration of darkness, doesn't matter how long the darkness has been there, Master says that, as soon as we turn on the light, the darkness could have existed for thousands of years. You come in with light, the darkness vanishes. This is why when Master, vanish the veils of light and shade is how Master describes it in his poem, Samadhi. Every word of that poem has so much fascinating interest. Vanish the veils of light and shade. There's light, and then there's that which blocks the light. Now, of course, if you listen to other of the satsangs, the fireside chats that I've been giving this morning, I talk about karma, I talk about other things. The principles are very simple. What causes us to block the light is not always accessible immediately, but that doesn't change the principle. And so what I was really deeply appreciating when Shivani was just saying the simple things that she said this morning, by the way, before I forget, when I was talking about resistance, I mentioned the course that Shivani had created. You can find it on anandaindia.org. She was in India when she gave that course. If you were looking for it, that's where it is. But when Shivani was just talking about, if you say these affirmations with enough power, it will simply change your vibrations, and that's what we feel. Now, I'm going to come back to also how I was really understanding this today. I had a very dear friend, and she was a wonderfully talented, generous, just an extremely positive human being. But for reasons unknown, karmic reasons, psychological reasons, reincarnational reasons, who knows, she had one extremely serious fault. And that fault was she had a tendency, how would she describe it? She had a very low sense of self-worth. And so she was always tormented by this thought of she wasn't good enough, that she was, that she couldn't really do it, even though she consistently produced and behaved in ways that were admirable by any standard. Her mental roommate, who was always talking to her, was telling her that she didn't have any self-worth. And so it poisoned. It didn't poison her achievement, but it poisoned her happiness in her life because she was always worried. And when I was talking to her about it, we were sort of working our way through it, I was trying to explain to her that she was a person who loved to be outdoors, and she would often camp a lot, and she was very physically courageous when she would be backpacking. I said, look, if you were backpacking in the Mojave Desert or someplace like that where rattlesnakes exist, and you were in your tent and a rattlesnake came into your tent, would you sort of sit there and think about it being in your tent? You know, would you kind of contemplate it and wonder what your mother did to you when you were young and the way you responded that caused the rattlesnake to come into your tent? Would you start wondering about past incarnations when you might yourself have been a snake and maybe the snake was one of your companions? None of those things. If you saw a rattlesnake coming into your tent or right outside your door, let's say, because if it's inside your tent, that's a lot. But let's say it's right there. You recognize that this is a life or death emergency. And there's no thinking about it. My life is threatened. I have to save my life. I will act like this. I said, however, and you know that, there's just no question about it. If you were about to walk in front of a car, if you saw someone else about to walk in front of a car, you would reach out and grab that person, wouldn't you? I was in Calcutta once, and you know, the cars come from the wrong side because they drive on the left side of the road. It was very crowded. I happened to be by myself, and I looked the wrong direction. And it looked clear, and I stepped onto the curb, and this car came close enough for me to put my hand on it, like that. But as soon as it was there, there was no hesitating on my part. I mean, I'm going to stop it with my hands, but I put my hands on it like this. And fortunately, the driver was more alert than I. But it was a moment. That it was a moment when there was no thinking about anything, there was reacting like that. I said to her, but you allow yourself, you entertain wrong thoughts on a fairly steady basis. And you seem to think that your wrong thoughts are some kind of a welcome, or at least unwelcome, but they're still a guest that you have to treat with courtesy. You don't seem to understand it is a life or death emergency. All the rattlesnake would take away from you is your body. Then you'd just be in the astral world, and that would be fine. And when it was time, you'd get another body. I mean, the rattlesnake couldn't take your body if it wasn't the right time for you to go, but all you would lose was your body. But when you have these wrong thoughts, they are you. Your body is what you wear, but your thoughts are your vibration. And when our thoughts go in a direction that we don't want them to go, it is a life or death emergency. Our entire future depends on our reaction. I mean, it's really, and I'm being very dramatic, because we have to understand that that is where our entire reality comes from. It starts with the thought, and the vibration of that thought is going to create its own magnetism, it's going to be self-perpetuating, and it's going to continue to define us. And then we'll wonder why tomorrow I feel just like today. Yesterday we were talking about resistance, we've talked about all kinds of things, all of which are attitudes of the mind. Now, let me just, give me a second here. I had a little something there, but it slipped away from me for a moment. So we don't have to be upset with ourselves at all. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Swamiji talked about once when he was working to build Ananda, and he earned all the money himself to buy the first property and to get it debt-free so the community could start debt-free, which was very important because it was hard enough without having to carry debt as well. And he was teaching meditation and yoga classes 5 or 6 nights a week, maybe, I think 5 nights a week, and then he would drive to Ananda Village for the weekend the land that he was purchasing, and then would come back and do it again. He would drive all over the Bay Area from San Jose up to Santa Rosa, which, if you know it, that's quite a few hours of driving in total. And he just did it night after night, and he needed every dollar that he was able to earn. And he was on the road to one of those classes, and all of a sudden he said he felt a cold enter him. You know, sometimes you just feel it. It's like a cold actually is a virus, a different kind of virus than the novel virus we're dealing with. But he said he felt it just enter into him. And he said one of the tricks of Satan, one of the tricks of the shadow force which blocks the light, is that it persuades us that we have to relate to it. It's a very interesting phrase. It persuades us that we have to relate to us. Oh, you know, you feel so sad today. Why do you feel so sad today? Why do you often feel sad? Why does it happen to you that you feel sad? Oh, when so-and-so talks to me like that, it reminds me of so many other things that happen to me that make me, I have to think about how this is. I have to feel it. Now, I'm not talking suppression. I'm not talking psychological ill health. You know, this is premised on a solid functioning ego that can make choices. So don't misunderstand me here, but I'm going to go forward with that. Satan convinces us that we have to relate to him. And as soon as we relate to him, we get on that vibratory wavelength and more thoughts of the same type come to us. So Swamiji felt when this virus came into him, it was a living thing and it wanted Swami to take it seriously. It wanted Swami to relate to it, you know, to think about how tired he really was, how much stress he was under, how it might be so nice to have a break, how God was asking a little too much of him. I mean, Swami didn't actually say any of those things because those are the things I would think. Those are not the things that Swami thought. But when the virus came in and it tried to get Swami to take it seriously, he thought to himself, I do not have time for this. And he just, in, I think he said out loud, in a very loud voice, he said, get out, like that. And he said, and the virus just ran away. Because Swami created a vibratory environment in which that virus could not live. Because he permeated himself with a higher vibration. And then the virus was vaporized. It just couldn't be there. It's for the same reason that I can't fall through this chair. Is because the chair is vibrating one way, I'm vibrating another, we don't match. We can't be, we don't merge. You know, now this is, again, these are complex scientific issues. It's the reason we don't always feel at oneness with other people, because our egos are vibrating and their egos are vibrating. But if we enter into super consciousness, like Master could or Swamiji could, then we feel ourselves one with everyone, because we go to the place with the vibration of our origin. And we can see how someone has lowered that vibration, put the shade in front of the light, but we can be one with them on the vibration of light, which is our true nature. So I'm not talking only or even primarily about how to avoid contracting COVID-19 disease, as Dr. Peter Van Houten always refers to it. He's always very exact. COVID-19 disease, he calls it. He doesn't just call it the virus. COVID-19 disease. I'm not even talking about physical health. I'm talking about well-being. I'm talking the absolute importance of realizing that every time our energy, our vibration, our attitude strays into fear and anxiety, that it's a life or death emergency. At the same time, it doesn't help to be afraid, because fear itself is what the connecting link is. You know, if you see that rattlesnake and you go into a panic about it, you won't know what to do. But if you see that rattlesnake and you just think, I better do something about this. This is, you know, everything ties together. When I was talking a few days ago about the 8 manifestations of spirit, I was talking one of the manifestations of spirit is calmness. Extreme calmness, which allows us, extreme calmness often gives us the power to act with great power and energy. So we need to cultivate also great calmness. We can't become afraid, but in that calmness, we have to realize something must be done. And we have a vast arsenal of teachings. You know, one of the ones that I haven't mentioned, there's so many that Swami and Master have given us. Swamiji taught us the super conscious living exercises, which are four exercises that we're supposed to do. And I say supposed to because I'm not sure how many of us do it, but it's marvelous. He says, the moment you wake up, don't give your subconscious mind any time to infect you with bad ideas. Narayani and Sherjo gave a satsang from Mumbai, and one of Narayani's five tips for right living through sheltering in place was be very attentive to the first thoughts that come into your mind when you wake up, because your subconscious mind is very open at that point. And if we allow ourselves to immediately flow with, oh, I wish I didn't have to get up, oh, this is going to be such a hard day, oh, another day, you know, like this, or the whatever we're afraid of, then we've imprinted the subconscious mind when it's the most receptive, just when you wake up, just when you fall asleep, we've imprinted it with wrong thought. And then that wrong thought is going to keep feeding us, and then we're off to the races again. We're off away from the race. We're back into the shade instead of the light. So Swamiji told us for superconscious living, as soon as you wake up, you leap out of bed and you march in place and you say, I'm awake and ready. I'm awake and ready. Now, of course, you feel so silly, absolutely silly, that not only are you cutting off your subconscious mind before it can infect you with weak thoughts, if your subconscious mind is inclined that way, and feeding it this powerful force of energy, you're also, most of the time, smiling and laughing. And talk about high vibes. You know, I've mentioned this before, but it strikes me anew every time I think about it. Master wrote that exquisite poem, Samadhi, in which, you know, everything in creation is part of my consciousness. It's in Autobiography of Yogi. You can find it online. Swami Kriyananda, in the context of Autobiography of a Yogi recording, reads that whole poem. You know, make a loop tape and listen to it over and over. Master said to memorize it and say it every day. This long poem, everything has been absorbed into his consciousness. And finally, at the very end, the very last line, Master says, speaking, I, the infinite, I, a tiny bubble of laughter, have become the sea of mirth itself. He didn't even say bliss. He said mirth. He didn't say a tiny bubble of joy. He said a tiny bubble of laughter. Because laughter itself is the spontaneous recognition that there's so much inside of me, I just can't hold it. I can't hold it back anymore. So the earlier in our day that we can remember that I am just a tiny bubble of laughter, the more powerfully that thought will become what we want. We want it to be our default. We want it to be when the mind goes to neutral, it goes to joy. And we can do that regardless of where we are. We have karma that has brought us away from the light a certain distance, but we got ourselves there. All we have to turn is walk back. I got myself really out of tune at one point in my life. I've done it more than once, but this was very early on. I got myself really out of tune. Just wrong thought, wrong thought, wrong thought, wrong thought, wrong action, wrong action, wrong action. And I was feeling very, you know, just terrible about it. And then just this thought came to me. Honey, you did it to yourself. Just turn around and walk back. And I did. I just turned around and walked back. It took a little bit of doing, but I did it. And I just thought, I'm not helpless. I made mistakes. Correct them. Just as simple as that. Takes energy, but it's not complicated. And we don't have to look at the infinite horizon. Just look at your feet, you know, and just figure out, pick it up and move it. Look at your thought. Just pick it up and move it. And God will help you. That's the most beautiful part about it. We are not alone. God bless you.